Good morning, Houston. Welcome to Amplified Houston 90.1 KPFD Pacifica Radio in Houston, Texas, 89.5 FM in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville, and streaming online at kpft.org. Amplified Houston is a collaboration of five nonprofit organizations: Baker Ripley, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Houston, Children at Risk, the Women's Home, the Houston Food Bank, and Houston's community radio station, KPFT Pacifica Radio. Listeners, all the programs you hear on KPFT are listener-supported. Become a sustaining member today by calling 713-526-5738 and pressing option 1. I am your host, Anna Coffey, CEO of the Women's Home, and this is Amplified Houston Women's Edition, where we talk to women doing hard things. In today's show, we'll speak with Devin Anderson, President and CEO of Justice Forward. But first, I want to let you know that Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer Road in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home, a nonprofit organization. Proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programming that help women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/cottageshop and at 713-526-4663. Devin, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's get started. Devin, I before the show started, we were talking about, you know, the power of stories and what an honor and a privilege it is to be on the receiving end of someone's story. And I'm really excited for you to share your story with our listeners today. But first, let's talk a little bit about your career journey. You are an attorney, and to put it mildly, because you've had a long career in justice, criminal justice, and worked lots of different positions. What inspired you to pursue a career in law and justice, and how did that path lead you to Justice Forward?
So I ended up going to law school because of my mother. I wanted to be an actress, and she told me, no, you're going to law school. And it was because actually she didn't. She instead got her PhD, but she would have been a great lawyer. So I didn't know anything about law school, and fortuitously, I was home visiting her my senior year of UT. I'd been accepted to UT Law School, and I don't know if you remember the newspaper insert that was the Parade magazine. They had, yeah. I loved that part of the paper. They had this cover story on America's top female prosecutors, and started reading it, and it was like these fabulous women. Linda Fairstein was one of them who started the sexual assault unit at the New York DA's office. There was the Black Widow from New Orleans, who never lost a murder case and always wore black suits. And this was before all the crime shows. And I thought, okay, that sounds really good. And so I learned a little bit about it and went to, unfortunately, a corporate law school. But I did finish. I started looking for jobs as a prosecutor and got hired by the DA's office in Houston. So I moved to the really big city. I grew up in Waco. So I kind of had my transition period in Austin, and then came to Houston, and it was the best job I've ever had. I mean, I loved the job so much. You start off with a bunch of other young people and you're trying misdemeanor cases. You go right to trial. There's a lot of camaraderie, very high stress, lots of hours, but super satisfying work, keeping the community safe. And later on, I realized getting people help. And so I stayed there for 12 and a half years. Great time. I just had a really high profile, serial killer, actually, capital murder. They kind of burned me out.
Wow.
And my husband, who I met at the office and had already left and become a judge, he said, you ought to run for judge. And there was a woman who was retiring. So I ran, mostly because of burnout, and was elected to a felony district court bench. And was not temperamentally suited for that, honestly. You have to be neutral. I'm not really a neutral person. I mean, I'm definitely an
That would be my
advocate.
problem too.
Yeah. And I had a hard time just poker face. I had no poker face. I still don't. Just had a hard time with that, but did my best. But the best thing that happened to me was I was asked to be a drug court judge. And that was a new thing in Harris County. They had a judge, a really trailblazing judge, had brought them to Houston, where treatment was preferred, and people with long-term drug problems came in, and the judge had a really positive relationship. It's a whole different model. And that was by far the best part of being a judge. So I was swept out of office, right? I had one term, swept out of office, became a defense attorney. This is going to Justice Forward. I just
It's
became a defense attorney, which again, did not like that. Felt like I was on the wrong side of the courtroom the whole time. But I will say the best part, two things, was that we helped a lot of offenders because my law partner was also a former drug court judge. We helped a lot of young offenders get help. And I was one of the first lawyers to represent a girl in girls court, which was a treatment court for girls in human trafficking.
Oh,
And
wow.
I had like the second client that went through that court. So, and to this day, she's doing very well. But I learned a lot from that side.
Yeah, Devin, can you explain for our listeners these specialty courts? I think that that's something that not everybody understands is available, and actually they're groundbreaking and wonderful opportunities for people. So just pause a minute and tell us about specialty courts.
Sure. So they started in Houston in the early 2000s, earlier in some places, but they're all over the country. And the thought is that instead of jailing people to solve a chronic problem that's causing them to cycle in and out of the criminal justice system, instead, why don't we treat that problem? And of course, the major problem is drugs, or alcohol, substance use disorder, but also mental health. Also circumstantial, like there's a gang court in Houston to get kids out of gangs. I mentioned the sexually exploited kids in juvenile court also. So it's a different model. It's not adversarial. It's a team approach with the judge, the lawyers, treatment provider, probation, all being on the same team. And people are assessed at a level to determine their level of need. And services are wrapped around them. So the recidivism rates are much lower. You just don't see, if they successfully complete the program, you do not see many come back. So it's
Right.
just aren't justice, you
And
know?
I think that a lot of people have this image of Texas in their head where it's law and order and, really tough on crime and everything, but there's this whole other side of it that I
Right.
think not enough people know about, that people who are truly in crisis, who have committed acts of that are illegal, there is an alternative for many of them, as long as they're not violent and they're, there are alternatives. So I think that's a really wonderful thing about our criminal justice system that doesn't actually get the attention it deserves. So, all right, let's
That's
bring it
right.
back
That's
now and
right.
tell us like what, okay, so from the drug court to
So
Justice Forward, tell me about that.
I was DA in between that, district attorney, and got to continue having some policy changes around recovery, understanding that we want to help the people we can help and jail the people who are hurting and harming us, right? So I love that work. Once again, got swept out of office. So trying to figure out what to do. I decided to go into nonprofit work. I didn't want to try cases anymore. I couldn't go back to the DA's office anyway. And so it's ironic, when I was a defense attorney, I was actually on the board of this organization, which was created to help people in drug courts. And they finally got a grant. It was an all-volunteer organization for, I guess, like 19 years or something. And then they got a grant from the Fondren Foundation to hire an executive director. It was part-time, and I was just lucky enough to be able to afford part-time for a while. And so I'm like, yes, I'll do that. They hired me to rebrand the nonprofit and to start supporting all people in all treatment courts in Houston. At the time, they started with four. Now we have 17. And so I did that. We rebranded to Justice Forward. And now, 5 years later, we're in Galveston. We helped two courts there and four courts in Fort Bend County, about to add another
Amazing.
there. Yeah,
That's
great work.
fantastic.
Really, I
Yeah,
really
yeah.
enjoy it. Right.
And what kind of assistance do you provide to people who are coming out of those courts?
Well, we help them while they're in it and once they graduate. And so transitional and emergency housing is probably our biggest expense because so many of the people coming through those courts are unhoused and you can't really recover if you don't have a safe place to live.
That's
So
right.
we help them with that. The other big cost and the one we think is critical is grief and trauma counseling because so many of these folks have early childhood trauma or
Yes.
trauma on the streets or grief
Yes.
issues. And you know that's
Yes.
self-medication, right?
Yeah,
It's also
100%.
triggering.
Yeah,
Right,
yeah.
right. And
At the women's home, we
you
do take quite a few women from the drug court.
know.
And we actually also employ quite a few women who have come through the
Yes.
drug court on their recovery journeys. And so, like I said earlier, just immense respect for that.
Right.
So, Devin, on this show, we focus on women doing hard things, and you've done a lot of hard things in your life.
Yeah,
And, I know, the law school and the DA's office and trying a serial murderer and everything. But I wonder if you could share with our listeners a really hard thing that you faced in your life and how that shaped who you are today.
there's one that nothing else compares to, and that was the death of my husband. He was elected district attorney in Harris County, and then right after he started, he was diagnosed with cancer, and it was fast and it was brutal. We have two kids, Brent and Sam, and they were 10 and 12 at the time. Thank God for my mother; she came and basically moved in with us because I kept working. I was a defense attorney at the time, and going with him to chemo and all that stuff and radiation, and just watching someone who's your person die is it is the worst thing to
Yes.
get through. But I'll tell you what, I had a therapist, MD Anderson, just thank God said we have therapists, you should get one right when he was diagnosed. And I could not have gotten through it without her. Just to have somebody to talk to and to just figure out how to do this. And I continued with her months after he passed away also. But I guess, you know, when you go through something like that, there's two things that I mean, I know how strong I am now. I couldn't, I don't know. It didn't occur to me to, I was sober at that time, relapse, wasn't going to drink. It didn't occur to me to go to bed and pull the covers over my head, which is what I wanted to do and never get out of bed again, right? Because I had two kids and I had to find a job and I had to figure that out and I did. So that and also the fact that life is precious and people who are worried about how old they are or their birthdays, that's silly. You should be happy. I'm 59 and I'm happy and grateful for every year. I've outlived him now. He died when he was 57 and it's,
Wow.
yeah.
So I've you know, I, when people make jokes about getting old and aging and everything, I try to retort. My retort usually is, "Hey, if we're lucky, we
Yeah.
get to grow old.
Be grateful.
Be grateful. Be
Right.
grateful." Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, Devin.
Yes.
So that I can't imagine. So I have not gone through that experience. I have had loved ones very close to me, pass away, same kind of deal with the cancer and everything, and it is a very hard road to walk down. And what would you say got you through it, for the most part?
My mother,
Your
I
mom?
could not have done it. Yeah, I could literally, she kept us going. She did.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back to something that you mentioned earlier, your sobriety. But
Okay.
first, let's take a few seconds to talk about how this radio show is coming to you. KPFT takes no advertising dollars at all, and almost every one of the people who work here to bring you the show are volunteers. Please call 713-526-5738 and press option 1 to become a sustaining member today. Okay, Devin, we're back here with Devin Anderson, who is the president and CEO of Justice Forward. We're having a talk about how she got through hard things, how she has navigated her life working in criminal justice systems. But Devin, you mentioned something before the break that I want to dig into a little bit. You've been sober a long time. Can you share with our listeners what happened that made you decide you wanted to live a sober life? And what advice do you have for women who are considering a sober life?
So, I was a highly functioning alcoholic. Alcoholism is in my family, like most alcoholics. And what made me get sober was really my husband. In 2009, we had gone back and forth with drinking. When we were dating, we broke up. When we, because of my drinking, it just had gotten to the point where I was drinking every night. The minute I got home, I walked in, got a bottle of wine out, poured a big glass. That was the way I decompressed, got rid of stress. But instead of just one glass of wine, I would drink until I was intoxicated pretty much every night. Thank God my kids don't remember that. That is a lucky thing. But Mike did. And the real fallout of that was that I just wasn't present. I was walling myself off. Anyway, at one point I was about to go out with my friends because I also was the kind of person, I think that's kind of obvious from what I just said. I could never have one drink and I always drank to intoxication. And I was going out with my friends one night and he said, "I feel like you're drinking to get through our lives." And it was like he had slapped me across the face. I don't know what it was about that time, but I went out and got drunk and came back the next morning, had a horrible hangover. And that was my sobriety date, April 28th, 2009. He quit with me, which helped. Despite the fact that I had been a drug court judge, I don't know why I just white knuckled it, but I did alone for so many years until last year I joined a 12-step program. And I think it's because of all the recovery work I'm doing now, and my partner now. I have a life partner who's in the same program. Seeing his serenity and just the way he handles himself made me start working the steps. And I'm telling you, it's a revelation. When
Is.
you go into your first women's meeting, especially, and you hear like, "Oh my God, it's like me times 12." All these women are saying exactly, what I've been going through. And it's just
It's
so comforting. So that's what I would tell women who, first of all, sober life is healthier. Alcohol is a carcinogen. We do not say that enough. And I got breast cancer, and I'm pretty convinced it was from my drinking because there's no cancer in my family. It is a carcinogen. You will be healthier. Your brain will be better. You will feel better. You'll sleep better. You'll be a better, more present person. But do not do it alone. That's the biggest thing. Join a 12-step group. Go into IOP, intensive outpatient, or go to the Council on Recovery, wherever, but you don't have to do it alone.
I love that advice. You don't have to do it alone. And in fact, having a community around you of support is one of the only ways that people stay sober in the long term. I mean, I know you did it, but you probably are the exception.
I don't
And
know how I did.
now that you're in a recovery community, I think you probably know this in your heart that it's really the community that gets you through it.
Yes,
So,
absolutely.
as we were talking about before the show, I belong to a recovery group myself, and we also work the 12 steps, and it is the life transforming. It is a way of living. It's not just a way to get past whatever you've gone through. So
That's
I
exactly
would
right.
second that. Get into some kind of community. I love 12 steps. It's not for everybody. But it is for a lot of people. But there are other groups out there that are non-12-step, and those are great too. So,
They are.
yeah. Well, so I am curious. You've had such a long history in criminal justice, and you have seen things from every angle, both as a judge, as a prosecutor, as a defense attorney. And you probably know this system better than the majority of people. I'm curious if you could create a model justice system that meets the needs of those who suffer from mental illness, substance use disorders, and other issues that balance the need for public safety. What would that look like?
Well, I think it would be the specialty courts. And I can't say that enough how effective they are, that treatment would be the first option. And it is in Houston. We also have a docket, a special docket that gets all the less than a gram possessions in one court with one judge. And most people that go through that get a non-conviction type of supervision with treatment. That is what it needs to look like. If substance use disorder and mental health disorders are not decriminalized, then this is the next best option. And then you recognize the violent offenders who cannot live among us. Those are the folks who need to sit in jail waiting for their trial if they're dangerous, if they are assessed at being dangerous, and then go to prison if that's what a jury decides. But otherwise, if you are caught doing low-level crimes because of addiction or mental health issues, you need to be diverted out, which is a non-conviction supervision period
Can
with
you share
treatment.
with our listeners the so somebody, let's say somebody has a felony conviction for a drug-related offense and they go and they do time. What is the impact? They've done their time, they're out of jail. What is the impact of that felony conviction on the rest of their lives? Now they're out of jail, they're clean and sober, they've worked their program, and they want to go get a job. So tell us about kind of what that might look like for them.
Well, they won't get it most likely. And if you think about yourself as an employer and you have a convicted felon and someone with no criminal history as your two candidates, I'd say about 99% of the time the employer's going to go, unless they're a second chance employer, they're going to go with that person. So they can't find work, they can't find housing, which is really the critical piece. Again, if you don't have a safe place to live, your life falls apart very quickly.
That's
And
so true.
that's why we help with cleaning up people's criminal histories as well. And just had a client say, I just got a new apartment, and for the first time, I didn't have to check the box because these
Oh, yeah.
specialty court programs, you can get taken off your record after you do them, the case. So we
So
pay for a lawyer to do that.
that's fantastic. And you know, I think that's one of the things at the women's home that we are so invested in is the expungement process. It does, it's not easy. And it can take a long time. It can cost a lot, and those are all barriers to getting it
Correct.
done. But can you talk for a minute about expungement, what it is, and how it works, and what do you have to do to get it?
Yeah, there's two things. One is expunction is for not guilties and dismissals. So a lot, and you'll have them on your criminal history. They don't go away just because you won your jury trial or your case got dismissed. It still might show murder dismissed on your record, and an employer is going to notice that. And so those can be completely removed from your record, but you have to have an attorney and you have to have file papers. So there's filing fees and attorney's costs. But for the petition for non-disclosure, that's the one where it's hidden from potential employers and housing people, but not law enforcement. So if you get in trouble again, they're going to know. But for example, drug court, if you successfully complete it, you stay out of trouble for 2 years, you get to have that hidden from your record. And that is across the board with most of the specialty courts. And of course, juvenile, they get their records sealed. What it is, either we're second chance or not. You know, we either believe we believe in recovery and letting somebody get back up, or we don't. And that's what the legislature in Texas, like you said, people think it's such a hard place, but they've passed this law so people could have second, real meaningful second chances. Yeah.
And I know the women's home is a second chance employer. So while we do check criminal records, we also allow people to tell us their story and what they've been through. And you know, I remember one time, this is before we had an HR department, a resume came across the desk, and I knew this person, and I knew that she was really strong in recovery, and I knew that I could trust her. But the person who was screening the resumes came back and said, have you seen this record? Do you know about this? And I said, yes, I do. And we are a second chance employer, and I have complete faith in this person. And it was not misplaced. I mean, a lot of times people are so eager for that opportunity, and it can be so transformative for them that they are going to perform better than some of your best employees because They are just so grateful and they have a drive to make a difference. So, all right. Well,
Exactly
we are
right.
actually almost at the end of our time. It went so fast, Devin. I
It
can't believe it. I'm curious. I just have one or two more little questions for you. What advice do you have for other women doing hard things, apart from sobriety and that kind of thing, just in general? What kind of advice do you have?
I think that because women are caregivers, and help so many people, it's self-care. That's the number one thing. You have to take care of yourself or you're going to fall apart. And that whatever that looks like for you, you've got to get enough sleep, eat well, work out, walk, whatever you need to do to
Yeah.
take.
And you know, self-care is so kind of nebulous about like what does self-care mean? What is it? And that's where I love the model that we have at the Women's Home. There's six elements of wellness that really contribute. And so, you know, is your financial health in order? That's a way to take care of yourself, contributing you to your
Yes.
401k or making sure that you're not in a lot of credit card debt. That's self-care. Having a community around you is self-care. Getting your exercise is self-care. Making sure you have enough sleep is self-care. All that, it's not about just manis and pedis, right? It's true self-care for every aspect of your life. So I'm curious to know, what is one small thing these days that brings you joy?
I am, you know what came immediately to mind? I'm a gardener. That is my big hobby, and that's where I get my happiness. And this is so weird, but we moved into a house that I've been doing working on the garden for 2 years, and one of the plants that's never bloomed just surprised me one day with a bloom. And I immediately thought about joy. I was joyful that that had happened. It was like a gift that I had been given. That's how I think about, that's why I garden. It's a gift.
That is so beautiful. Well,
Yeah.
I think that is a great note for us to end our show on today. Devin, I'm going to have you back because there's still so many things I want to talk
Oh,
to you
let's do
about.
it. Thank you.
Yeah. And
Thanks.
also, Devin, you have your own podcast. Do you want to give
I
that a plug?
do. Thank you. It's Beyond the Bar, where justice meets recovery, and we're talking about recovery issues in the criminal justice system.
And I
Thanks a
tuned
lot.
in,
Appreciate
and
it.
it's a great show. So those of you who are living recovery or are recovery curious, tune in
Yes.
and listen to some really inspiring stories.
Thank you.
I want to thank our guest, Devin Anderson, of Justice Forward. I really appreciate you being on today. I also want to mention that Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home, a nonprofit. And the proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. You can find more information at thewomenshome.org. Be sure to stay tuned for Gulf Streams with Weston Twardowski for the latest environmental and climate news in the Gulf Coast region and beyond. This is Anna Coffey with Amplify Houston, the Women's Edition, over and out.